The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to the 2017 Internal Medicine Board Review Course, sponsored by the American College of Osteopathic Internists. The course was held March 22nd through 26th, 2017, at the JW Marriott Las Vegas Resort and Spa. The course featured nationally known speakers presenting a wide variety of topics of interest to the internist preparing for certification or recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Diagnosis of peripheral arterial disease is presented by Dr. Asif Sarajan.
So I'm a cardiologist and also an interventionalist that works on peripheral vascular disease. But for your boards, the things that are important are overall management of the patient's cardiovascular risk factors and how it relates to peripheral arterial disease. So the typical question may be that you have, say, a 50-year-old or a 60-year-old gentleman who comes in with classic claudication, and what would be your treatments of choice for this patient? So the patient is a smoker, so obviously one of the first things that you're going to talk about is stopping smoking, exercise, but what about their medication regimen? And it's important to understand that patients with peripheral vascular disease, whether they have claudication or they have asymptomatic disease, some of those patients may present to you with critical limb ischemia, but outside of those, patients with peripheral vascular disease, they're more likely to die from cardiovascular death from, you know, myocardial infarction, stroke, than they are to have an amputation. That's the key thing to remember for the examination. So you may have a question where there's a 60-year-old gentleman who's a smoker, and what medication regimen would you want to start them on? And as we know, with peripheral vascular disease, you're going to talk about starting them on a statin to reduce their LDL. And based on the most recent guidelines, those patients would be on high-dose statin therapy. And then they're going to be on, and one question that you may have is, should you pick a clopidogrel or aspirin? And based on the CAPRI trial, and that would be a patient that you would pick a clopidogrel. And then if they are hypertensive, what antihypertensive medication would you want to pick for that patient? And the one that has been studied is ramipril. So those are some of the things that you may see on your examination. Demographics are age over 50, third of them are diabetics, 50% have coronary disease. So remember, vascular disease, coronary artery disease, it's a spectrum of disease. So the same thing, what I tell my patients, same kind of process that is going on in your legs, it's the same process that's going on in your heart. Patients who are over the age of 50, who are smokers or diabetics, have a high risk of having peripheral vascular disease, and also patients who are over the age of 70. What about asymptomatic patients for screening? When would you recommend an ankle brachial index for screening those patients? Similarly, as I said, patients over the age of 50 who are either smokers or diabetics, or patients over the age of 70. So if you're over the age of 70 and you have absent pulses, if it changes the way you manage the patient. So for example, if the patient already has a diagnosis of diabetes, they're already, based on the guidelines, they should be on an aspirin and they should be on a high dose statins if they can tolerate it. If it's not going to change the way you manage them, then there's no need to do any kind of testing. But in those patients who you think you're going to change the management of them, and management is going to be medical management unless they have critical limb ischemia. So if you have a patient who is over the age of 75, they may have a case who has no previous diagnosis of coronary disease or any peripheral vascular disease, and they've been told that their cholesterol is fine, quote unquote. But the patient has absent pulses, cool feet, that patient may be a candidate for an ABI testing because that may change the way you manage the patient. So in population over 55, intermittent claudication is about 5%. And here's the key point here, as I was telling you before, the amputation rate is very low. However, the cardiovascular mortality and morbidity is quite high. Non-fatal cardiovascular event rate, which is myocardial infarction, stroke, is at 20%. And 5-year mortality is 30%, cardiovascular cause being 75% of that mortality. There's a declining survival associated with severity of peripheral vascular disease. So as the ankle brachial index goes down, the mortality goes down as well. Mortality goes up as well and the survival goes down. Patients with peripheral arterial disease have a higher risk of death from all causes, cardiovascular disease, coronary heart disease. So this is a key thing for your examination. So our goal of treatment is to reduce the overall cardiovascular risk burden. This is what I was talking about. Same thing that is happening in the heart, patients who have a myocardial infarction, you have a plaque rupture, you have a plaque progression that causes angina, and in the legs, patient may have claudication, you have a plaque rupture. In the coronary artery, that's going to be an acute coronary syndrome presentation, and the same process is happening in the coronary arteries, same thing is happening in the peripheral vasculature. Primary sites of involvement, femoral and the popliteal arteries are 80 to 90%. So in smokers, we see a significant portion of these patients have superficial femoral artery disease. Tibioperoneal disease is 40 to 50%, aortoiliac artery is 30%. In diabetics that I take care of, the patient had an ulcer. Majority of these patients have infrapopliteal disease. So it is underdiagnosed and undertreated. So when you are thinking about patients with diabetes and you're thinking about the term, quote unquote, diabetic ulcer, think about the etiology of the diabetic ulcer. So it may be a trauma. Patients have neuropathic ulcers, meaning they have tight-fitting shoes. They have some sort of injury because of the neuropathy, and it may just be patients who get this from a trauma. But about 50% of these patients have peripheral arterial disease, either in the small vessels that we're not able to see angiographically, or they're in the digital vessels. I've seen some patients who have very distal peripheral arterial disease, or in the infrapopliteal in the diabetic patients. So this is the most common site of involvement. In fact, the gentleman I took care of yesterday, he had bilateral clean superficial femoral and popliteal arteries. He had severe infrapopliteal disease. Okay, diagnosis, history taking. So the key here is that your patients may not have classic claudication, and a significant portion of your patients may not have classic claudication, especially diabetics. Diabetic patients may not have that because of neuropathy. They may present to you with an ulceration. That may be the first presentation of peripheral arterial disease. Careful examination of the legs, so you're looking for hair and looking for pulses. You're looking for warmth, comparing the two sides. Then you're going, the things that we look at are the ankle brachial index, which is the systolic blood pressure in the ankle, and also systolic blood pressure in the upper arm, so the ankle over brachial index. Okay, so the numbers to remember here are just remember, there's different grades there, but for the examination, the key one that you need to remember is greater than 0.9. So if you can put that number in your head, 0.9. So don't worry about the stuff in the middle. Obviously, as it gets worse, the patient has worsening ischemia. And they will give you other signs in patient. They're not going to describe a patient with a ABI of 0.1 with no form of tissue loss. I saw actually a patient with an ABI that was close to that. It was like, I think, 0.15, and the patient had very severe critical limb ischemia. So you're not going to have a patient like that. But what they will tell you is that if the patient has an ABI less than 0.9, and they may ask you, you know, what kind of treatments would you want to start on that patient, you know, and then thinking about overall vascular disease risk, you know, statins, aspirin, controlling their blood pressure. Other types of non-invasive diagnostic testing, segmental blood pressure recording, we do this in our office, segmental PVR, exercise stress testing, reactive hyperemia. We also do Doppler ultrasound. So the key here to remember is if the patient has an ABI that is borderline, say maybe they'll give you a case who's diabetic, who has some kind of atypical symptoms, or they may have ulceration, and they're, let's say they're able to walk, and the patient's ABI is like 0.91 at rest. So in that patient, think about doing an ABI after exercise, because if you have a drop in the ABI after exercise, then that patient has, he may have a significant peripheral vascular disease. Also, in patients who you may see, also in clinically, patients with very high ABI, so you may get an ABI of 1.4, and that does not mean that the patient does not have vascular disease. It just means that they have calcific vascular disease that is non-compressible, and the ABI may be falsely high. Okay, so symptoms worsen in about 25% of patients. Approximately 5% of patients will require amputation, and around 5 to 10% have critical limb ischemia, risk of limb loss. And increased risk of mortality, primarily from cardiovascular causes. Again, more likely to die from cardiovascular event than to have an amputation if you have intermittent claudication. Modification of risk factors, smoking cessation, diabetes control indirectly, no direct studies to show that that will prevent worsening vascular complications, but we know that patients who are poorly controlled diabetics are more likely to have vascular complications. Dyslipidemia management, based on the most recent guidelines, you know, the guidelines say high-dose statin therapy in these patients, regardless of the LDL level. But as Dr. Burke, I believe, was talking about some of the studies with, you know, even further reduction in LDL with ezetimibe, so lower is better in these patients. And I was talking to you about the ramipril in the HOPE trial. So patients with asymptomatic or symptomatic peripheral arterial disease, if they have hypertension, using that agent has been shown to be beneficial. Aspirin has been studied. Clopidogrel has been studied in the CAPRI trial in symptomatic patients. Again, a reduction in all-cause cardiovascular events. So MI, stroke, cardiovascular death, not really the amputation rate. So what are the FDA-approved drugs for intermittent claudication? Pentoxifilin. We don't use that as much anymore, and celostazole. That's the one that is primarily used currently. Just remember on this one that data are insufficient to support its widespread use. Celostazole inhibits platelet aggregation induced by ADP, collagen, adrenaline, arachidonic acid and thrombin, more potent in suppressing platelets aggregation than aspirin or ticlopidine, and it does improve the ankle brachial index. And there have been cases of patients treated with celostazole for digital ischemia. So this chart here really shows the overall outcome of the patients. So if you have patients with peripheral vascular disease, you have, especially if you have critical limb ischemia, you have a high cardiovascular mortality rate. And keep that in mind. And also, you know, there's a risk of limb loss in these patients. Above knee amputation, And as it shows here, after 2 years, there 30% of these patients are dead. So this tibioperoneal vessels are usually involved. So keep in mind that your non-invasive testing may miss some of these vascular problems because you know, if you do just a plain ABI test, you may have a falsely elevated ABI, and the patient may have critical limb ischemia. This is the PVR. Basically, we're looking at the pulse volume waveforms and looking for blunting of these waveforms. This is the arterial duplex. So this is a triphasic waveform. This is a normal waveform. We have a TAS classification. They're not going to ask you about this, but basically, if there's long occlusions of the SFA, patients do better with the surgical treatment. Remember this, there's a significant operative mortality. And as you go further below the knee, the patency rate also goes down. So for most of infrapopliteal disease, I use percutaneous intervention. If there is a femprop disease, I use more of the, if the patient has a long occlusion of the superficial femoral artery and a good landing point for a graft, especially a vein graft, that is the treatment of choice. It's just a comparison to what it looks like on the left-hand side, endovascular, and then you can see on the right-hand side, this is surgical treatment, and we're trying to prevent the amputation. Assessment of touch pressure in diabetic patients, patients who have diabetes have a loss of protective sensation. Failure defined as inability to sense 4 out of 10 locations per plantar aspect. Insensate patients have a 7-time risk of ulceration. So we also use the Rutherford classification, 0 being asymptomatic, 1 being mild claudication, moderate and severe claudication, 4 being rest pain / minor tissue loss, and then in the 5 and 6, minor tissue loss and major tissue loss. As I was mentioning, this is the ABI measurement, blood pressure in the arms, blood pressure in the PT and DP. Again, the key number here to remember actually is just remember the 0.9 and then 1.3. So if you can remember those two numbers, less than 0.9, greater than 1.3. So when we're looking at the segmental pressures, if there's a 20 millimeters of mercury difference in the levels, that is considered significant. In patients with calcified vessels, you can also do a toe brachial index, and that can be used when there's artificially elevated ankle brachial index. So this is a patient with an iliac stenosis, pointed by the arrow there. Okay, what other types of peripheral vascular disease? Remember about abdominal aortic aneurysm. You may be asked about screening. So who are the patients that you should, what about Medicare screening? Patients who are, if you're a male, between the ages of 65 to 75, and you've smoked at least 100 days in your lifetime, that patient should get a screening abdominal aortic aneurysm ultrasound, or if you have a family history of abdominal aortic aneurysm. So they may ask you about that, so keep that in mind. AAA is defined as AP diameter greater than 3 centimeters. Risk factors are smoking, hypertension, and family history. So look for that in the clinical vignette. Patient may have a family history. On examination, patient may have a bruit. They may present with back pain. Monitoring is recommended if it's less than 4 centimeters, Q 2 to 3 years. If it's 4 to 5.4, it's Q 6 to 12 months. Surgery greater than 5.5 or 0.5 centimeters in 6 months. So that number is important, 5.5 centimeters. So keep that in mind. Thoracic aortic aneurysm, Marfan syndrome. So these are the aortopathies and bicuspid aortic valve, as I was mentioning previously. This is also linked with aortopathies. Turner syndrome, Lodice syndrome, and acute arterial occlusion. You may see this clinically. Most of the time, it's going to be cardiac origin, atrial fibrillation being the most common cause. Left ventricular thrombus is also another cause. Endocarditis, myxoma, we've seen some of these. Paradoxical embolism, especially in those patients with atrial septal defects. Plaque ulceration. These are the signs: pain, pallor, polar, cold, meaning cold, pulseless, paresthesias, paralysis. So when you see a patient like this, this is an emergency, arterial emergency, so important to get the vascular specialist involved right away. The differential diagnosis, we've seen some of this also, phlegmasia, cerebral dolens, aortic dissection, low cardiac output state. Berger's disease, thromboangitis obliterans, inflammatory occlusive disease of the small and medium-sized peripheral arteries. Young male, this is what they will tell you. They'll usually tell you about smoking young male. Numbness, paresthesias, writer's cramp, ulceration, claudication, migrating thrombophlebitis may involve the distal digits. That's what you will see.